Session number 14978, Charles Turnbull, Reel 11.
Mr. Turnbull, Reel 11. We're talking about thieving going on in the with particularly with the supplies, naffy supplies and so on. Where was it going?
Hard to determine really, but I would say that really the civilians probably hadn't been used to the little bits of luxury that were coming for the troops, and I wouldn't like to condemn them, but I would assume the lot of naffy supplies could disappear into that area. Probably a little bit of black market was going on.
This must have caused upset if men weren't getting the supplies.
Well, I can't remember the troops going drastically short. That there was always something in the naffy. And of course at that time, well, I was in the sergeant's mess. And we did have probably a little bit more being drafted into that. We had a sergeant who was the mess operator, and whoever it was sort of there on like a monthly basis, and it was up to him to ensure that the off-duty times were a little bit more pressurable and probably what they would be as far as the ordinary soldier was, where he had to depend on what was happening in the naffy. But I can't remember anybody being violently discontented, because what was happening was that really, under the conditions that we had to endure, camp concerts were held, you know, within the unit. We had some quite good entertainers, and I can remember ENSA concerts taking place.
These would be stars of entertainment from England.
That's right.
Recall any?
But I can't recall anybody in particular, mind. It was mainly concerts within the battalion. Really, figures who had performed well in England, they became in their own right quite stars that you knew when. I can remember one, a Sergeant Hogg, who was quite a beautiful singer. And you had your comedian types who were known by them, and it was amazing what talent was there. And those concerts were enjoyed by the troops. And of course the sporting promotions were still held. In Borgarness we had boxing tournaments. And naturally, the football fraternity, as usual, had soon been able to construct a football pitch and into platoon, and company tournaments and things like that were held, which was always looked forward to.
Did you get involved with playing against the civilians in any of these sports?
Not in Iceland. Not in Iceland. It was mainly inter-platoon, inter-section and inter-company tournaments. And then we had road runs around Borgarness, which was a thing that mainly took place on Sundays.
So that would obviously help to combat the boredom.
That combated the boredom. And of course, you've got to remember that really, as far as possible, training was of primary importance. I can remember a ski section being formed, a ski platoon, because we had the conditions for that sort of thing. And of course the men who were in that had to be trained on how to ski, and one had to remember in the winter about the short hours of daylight, so that really how to train for night operations were of no great difficulty. They could be performed really after really reveille and that sort of thing, you know. We only had about at that time I think only about 4 or 5 hours of daylight. Then after that, any night operations could be carried out if one wanted to train for that sort of thing, and that took place. So you had really inter-platoon training and battalion training. I can remember on one occasion that really, but this was after we went back to Reykjavik, that we had to do a mountain exercise, and the our platoon had to get to the crest of this mountain, and when we were up there the fog and the mist came down and we couldn't get down. And of course during that, the whole of that night, all that we had was really a gas cape, you know, which you carry your full equipment, and I can remember being covered with, you know, what you could get to cover yourself over with. And when we managed to get down the next day, after about a fortnight, I had to report sick. And I'd caught the dose of pneumonia. And I suppose when one looks back on the conditions, one can imagine that sort of thing happening.
We taught survival techniques in case you did get lost.
Not really. I think it was, well, at that time, I can't remember that happening. That was the only time it happened. But I can't remember any specific training on really how to combat a condition like that.
You mentioned mountain training. That would be just more than just getting up a mountain. What form did it take?
Well, the day that I'm talking about, it wasn't a great high mountain. Yeah, it was just a case of really being in a sort of a precarious position. It must have been quite rugged. That with the fog and the mist coming down, you just couldn't walk down. But we couldn't get down, and we had to stay there. So it must have been quite sheer.
As a unit in mountain training, how did you move up a mountain, assuming that you were assuming there was an enemy on the top of it and you were taking it?
Well, really, that really hadn't really come into it until we came back to Wales, when we did train for mountain warfare.
The conditions, as you say, were very rugged. Nissen huts, two stoves. What about food? I'm talking about the basic army food. Was that British food, or were you having to take in what the Iceland is?
No, British food, British rations. There again, I mean, I can't remember being short of food. It was typical army food. But what the cooks dished up as far as hot stews and things like that, I can't say that we suffered drastically from lack of food. I think one had become accustomed to it and assumed that army rations was the thing, and we couldn't expect great luxury, but what we had was quite feeding.
And of course, you did have this Nafi.
You had the Nafi to go to on your off-duty times.
The sleeping arrangements, we've talked about the beds that the men were sleeping on as typical beds. Blankets and to keep warm, obviously in the summer wouldn't be a problem, but in the winter were more issue to the men in the form of bedding.
I think we had the initial allocation, which were suitable for the wintry conditions, and your beds were made up, and even when the conditions were better in the summer, well, if it wasn't necessary to use them, it wasn't necessary. But what we were issued with, should we say, kept you warm.
Did you have lockers, or did the men have lockers behind the beds to keep their things in?
No lockers.
So how did they store rifles and equipment and so on?
Well, I think everything was really maintained, really, sort of beside your bed. If anything had been constructed as far as a lock was concerned, as I say, I think it would be constructed by anyone who had been recruited as a joiner who had worked with wood. It was a case, really, I would think, of improvisation as far as possible. There again, if you had a good section leader, let's face it, it was his responsibility trying to ensure that his section was looked after, and if anything could be got to maintain the situation better, well, that was done. But I can't remember anything being specifically supplied. I think it would be a case of initiative more than anything else.
Keeping barracks clean, the huts clean, was that just the usual army routine?
Army routine. There was an inspection each day. And of course, you had your sergeant who was responsible for his platoon, who had his inspection during the day. Then of course you had an inspection by your company commander, who would come round probably once a week to see the conditions were good and adequate. And of course that was your officer in charge of the platoon, who had to ensure that everything was in order. But there again, he depended on his platoon sergeant mainly for that. And then of course you had your company sergeant major, who kept an eye on things, not forgetting the regimental sergeant major for discipline within the battalion.
What were the washing facilities like?
Quite adequate. That really, what we had in Borgarnes itself, they had like mobile baths. We used to have to parade the platoon. You had a day that was allocated for baths, and we used to go down there for bath parade.
How often that would that be?
Once a week. To have your bath.
The normal washing facilities, were they in another hut or part of the
No,
hut?
I think we had them in the I don't think they were outside. Well, of course, under the weather conditions, I don't think they would be.
Was there running water on the camp?
There was running water, yes. Uh-huh.
there must have been some problem with freezing up, was there not?
I would say there would be with the weather conditions, but it doesn't come, you know, strictly to mind. I suppose there again, one would have probably a means of converting snow and ice to water with heat within the huts.
Boredom, I think you more or less intimated, was the problem, and you had to keep men occupied.
Well, you had, and you had, as I've said, the concert parties, and I think I remember such things as spelling bees and things like that. And mainly whenever it was possible, outside activities were always welcomed. Sport, physical training, anything that you could organise to alleviate boredom. I can remember talks taking place as well.
What might they be about?
Well, I think I can remember talks on Icelandic history, and I think really subjects of what had happened in Europe, what was happening in Britain, you know. You
were kept well informed.
Well informed, you know, what was happening to the civilian population, which was always of concern of the troops who had families back in England. Everybody was concerned about what was happening there, and if you could glean any information at all. Of course, one looked forward to the post coming.
How often did that come?
Frequently. There was no hold up as far as letters was concerned in Iceland.
Were they flown in, or did they come by boat?
Came by boat mainly, I would think. I mean, the convoys were still ensuring that the shipping was maintained. One thing that did take place, which I haven't mentioned yet, I came back to England on a weapon training course at the Hythe Small Arms Wing at Bisley.
What date was this?
Well, it was probably about 6 months after we got there. And there again, that was quite an experience. Because what happened was, I had to go to Reykjavik and get on a boat. And what it was a corvette. And I think, if I can remember rightly, it carried all people who were coming back on courses, leave, people who were sick. Not that in Iceland there was a great deal of sickness, mind. I think the weather conditions seemed to kill off a lot of germs, should we say, under the conditions. That we weren't bothered a great deal with a great amount of sickness, but whether it was people coming back for probably some sort of an operation or something like that, or something had to take place. But that's what the troops aboard consisted of. A lot coming back on courses. And really, this corvette, when it left the harbour, it didn't have an escort. I think we were told at the time that really, one wondered why, that the speed would probably outdistance any submarine that it may come in contact with. Now, whether that was true or not, I wouldn't like to say. But I do know that instead of taking 5 days or so to get back to England, it took a long, long time. I think we must have been chased all over the Atlantic. And eventually, we didn't dock in the north of Scotland, we docked at Barrow. which it must have been chased. But anyhow, we did eventually land quite safely.
Were there other people, army people, on the boat?
Mainly army people. Mainly army personnel.
And were a number going on the same course as you?
Can't remember anybody going, no. No. I didn't team up with anybody. And when I docked at Barrow, of course you could see Blackpool in the distance where my wife was. And I don't know how I got it, but I can remember getting a 3-day pass. And I was able to see her. And then I went down on this small arms course. And I think I was there a month.
What did that entail?
Well, what it entailed was small arms training and rifle training on the range at Bissell. A lot of training with the Bren gun and that, you know. I think the idea was that it was really training NCOs to become, could we say, good instructors with small arms weapons.
Bren and rifle, were there any other weapons that were coming in at this time?
I can't remember. No more training. We didn't have any training with an anti-tank rifle or anything like that. It was mainly how to be a good shot with the rifle. That was of primary importance. And of course they had the ideal conditions to train people there. And after I'd been there for that period of time, I can remember getting a 7-day pass to see me parents. And
how did it pass a kind of an examination? Or
we had to sit in examinations, and I think I can remember I didn't get a Q1, but I got a Q2. I did pass the examinations.
So other than firing the weapons, what else were you doing? Were dismantling, learning the
parts? Learning how to look after your weapons, how to look after them correctly, and really how to become, should we say, a good instructor, which was the main object of why you'd been sent there.
And you say that lasted a month?
I think it was a month. And then I came back, and really this time I came back to Durham, and Nancy came from Blackpool to join up with us again. And then I had to make arrangements to get back to Iceland. And what happened was, first of all, I went to Brunsmith Castle, which was then a depot of the DLI. And funny enough, I was sent down from there down to Meadowfield, where people that had congregated there, where there'd been allocated rooms in a public house. And it was mainly NCOs who had been on courses and that sort of thing. And they were waiting for transport to different places. And it was really a small unit that was really based in Meadowfield. But the NCOs were allocated to this pub in Meadowfield. And which meant that really, although Nancy had gone back to Blackpool, my father was able to come from Hetney Hall to see me in Meadowfield. And he had some quite enjoyable nights there. So with being an older person, he thought it was absolutely great to be mixing in with people who were serving in the forces. And of course, they ensured that he had a real good night before he had to travel back to Hetney Hall. But I think I was there for about a fortnight or 3 weeks.
Were you doing anything other than just being there?
Just being there, really. And then the word came that we arrangement had been made to go back to Iceland, and I went back.
And where did you sail from?
No place sticks in my mind. It was just somewhere in Scotland.
And the boat, was it another naval boat?
It wasn't a naval boat this time. I think it was ordinary transport that we went back on. And then things resumed the way they were before. Went back to the same company and resumed my same duties.
What was the turnout of the men? Were they kept strict in this way?
Oh, yes. Yes, the great emphasis placed on turnout. And, of course, we had the barge was the Icelandic bear, the polar bear. And I would say that really the battalion was quite smart. By this time, I would say that the training had been good, and it was equipping the men for good service when they came back to England or wherever they had to go to. I think the harsh conditions had been good, and it had trained them for future operations with the company and battalion training and what training place had taken there, because the conditions were harsh. And could we say that it had hardened the unit up to, could we say, a good fighting force?
Were there any particular parades that you still followed, ceremonies of any kind?
The one that sticks in my mind was just the one for Churchill.
Sunday morning parades, with a church parade still going on?
That doesn't stick in my mind greatly, but some would take place. If I remember rightly, some were organised as usual down in Bowness itself, because they did have a local place of worship there. That really was an important factor, that church parades would still be held. Even if they weren't held there, they would be held in camp. That really, great emphasis was still placed on a religious ceremony taking place, that the officers still took that into consideration. That was an important factor.
Were there any problems with weapons with the severe climate, particularly the winter? Did that have any effect upon weapons, keeping them efficient, firing well? Did have any safeguards that you had to follow?
I can't remember anything in particular that had an adverse effect, really. That one had to remember that you were still living in covered accommodation. You weren't living in trenches or anything like that. That when when anything took place outside, well, you were returning to living conditions. We weren't sort of out for days and days and days, where I suppose precautions then would have to be taken in some form or another. Although things did take place with live ammunition. I think I can remember at one time, I think there were something taking place where there were too many seals in a certain harbour, and I think the battalion were taken out to help to cool the seal population. They were becoming too many. And I can remember rifle practice taking place which when one looks at it, wasn't a case of shooting to kill a seal population just for practice, but there was an object behind it. But I seem to remember things like that happening.
In the winter, you did mention you got additional clothing because it must have been bitterly cold. For example, guard duties outside. How did you cope with those in the winter?
I can't remember really furry clothing. I think a lot of it would be probably warmer underclothing. We still had our quite a heavy uniform and jerkins, things like that. I mean, when one looks back on it, right, guard duties would be performed, but we weren't bothered by, we'd had no alarms. We had one scare, I can remember, and the battalion had to stand too. But when it had all been sorted out, I think it had been just some sort of signals that had been sort of located, which couldn't be sort of verified. And in case there had been some sort of an attempted landing somewhere, the battalion stood too, but they were found out to be false, and the battalion stood down.